Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, you know the drill, you know the game. It's Tennis Bets Live. We're ready to go here. Madrid Masters into the second week. A lot of drama. Women have already started the quarterfinal round. We're getting there for the men as well. Tennis Bets Live streaming on YouTube, Tennis Bets, and Tennis.com Facebook. Got the whole crew here. Zachary Cohen, Kenny Ducey, Pamela Maldonado, ready to dive into more Madrid Masters, some picks and plays on the show. Pamela Maldonado, welcome back to the show. It's been an interesting time of tennis at this altitude, but what's really caught your eye so far?
Well, first off, I did not have Félix Auger-Aliassime to be up a set and a break to Casper Ruud. So that's interesting because Félix has slowly been trying to find his form. And I say slowly, I mean like the last 2 years. And then all of a sudden here in Madrid, it seems like it's coming together. So that was an interesting one. Cerúndolo against Alexander Zverev. Not just that Zverev lost, but he lost kind of handedly. Cerúndolo in that matchup, every shot that he was hitting was coming back with so much depth, and there was no answer from Zverev on how to handle that. He couldn't control the pace. He couldn't control the – he kept moving further and further back. That wasn't working. At one point, you saw Zverev move up into the baseline. That wasn't working. And then at some point, he's like, all right, I'm just not going to win.
No. I will say, though, hey, one of us did. One of the panel members did. Kenny's on the Félix game spread, which we'll get to in a second. Here's your updated live odds. Again, it moves so fast, so – forgive me if I'm a point or two behind as we try to keep tabs on this, but Kenny, that was one of your picks.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you guys were listening to me, the people out there, the people on this panel. Yeah. Last time we had a show, I said, look out for Félix. It's going to be a little bit of a roadblock for Casper Ruud. I just think this tournament plays so different than all the other clay court tournaments. Not to mention when Félix first arrived on the ATP tour, he had an excellent run on clay. This guy looked like a clay specialist, and it was kind of shocking, right? Because he didn't really grow up playing on a lot of clay. He's proven that he can play on this surface. This is a great surface for even a non-clay court player with the fast speeds. We've seen that with another guy we'll talk about in a little bit that I had today. But this is a guy that's been steadily playing a little bit better this year. Pam mentioned 2 years he's been trying to find his form. It's been a long time. He's had a couple of pops here and there. He saved his top 100 ranking, really, at the end of last season. He was basically almost out of the top 100. But, you know, sometimes it takes a little while to get through some tough, tricky first-round draws, second-round draws to really break through at a tournament. But, you know, he might lose this match. He still very easily could. But I just – anyone who hits with pace, we saw with Cerúndolo, seeing it right now with Félix, the little – bit flatter ground strokes and the big serve and pace really plays up here. So it is sort of a tournament of rebirth for a lot of players here this year, last year as well with Jan-Lennard Struff, who almost took out Carlos today. And I don't even know if he did or did not. I was looking at the score.
He almost did though.
Otherwise that would have been the lead of the show. Karatsev last year, Zhang. So, I mean, this is definitely the land of opportunity in Madrid every year. And that's what makes such a fun tournament.
Yeah. And even though, I mean, as Pam mentioned, Cerúndolo beating Zverev was a story in the day of so far the tournament. And even with Zverev losing Zico, bringing in here Zachary Cohn, I do think big hitters are thriving in the Madrid altitude. It's not always all of them. And sometimes it's the ones you don't expect, but you're starting to see if you get into serving rhythm, and even if you have flat ground strokes like Andre Rublev did today, you can really zone in and play well if you're a big hitter.
Yeah, and it was one big hitter losing in Zverev, but Cerúndolo, like he hits as big as anyone. It's just a matter of whether or not he's making it. So it's really never surprising what happens with him. It's just one way or the other. It's going to be incredible or it's going to be horrible. So it is fun to watch him play. That was a tough loss for Zverev. I know we all kind of had him. But yeah, hopefully he won't run into Cerúndolo in the French Open.
If there's one thing we learned last year, though, it's not to get too excited about Madrid like I did with my boy Klaylor Fritz, who I thought was finally learning how to play on clay, and he's doing really well again here this year. But that it is sort of it's much different conditions. In I mean, sometimes like last year, I think Roland Garros actually did play a little bit quicker than normal. I would have to ask the court speed expert here on the bottom left, but yeah, normally it's just it's an outlier of a clay tournament.
Yeah. Well, before we get to the top two men's seeds surviving today, for lack of a better term, I do want to pay tribute and talk about a match yesterday. The 15-match win streak ended. Danielle Collins did lose a match. Sabalenka beats her in three, wins the last two sets. Look, I'll start with this, and Pam, I know you've been following the Danielle Collins thing as well. This run was incredible, and if that's what it takes to beat Danielle Collins, I don't think she's going to dip in the rankings anytime soon.
Well, and I also think it's a big testament to Sabalenka. I think none of us had her running this deep because she was coming into this tournament maybe a little bit more unpredictable as far as what the surface was going to do for her. So, I mean, that's a huge win. I think in the first set, I came out thinking like, oh, Collins has this in the bag. Never the case. Gave it a full three sets, and then we can see what happens. But it was a great match from both players. I very much enjoyed it.
They were bashing Zico, and you saw why Sabalenka, you know, she's won this tournament a couple of times, but her resolve is actually pretty good. I do think that's the biggest adjustment in her game is that she doesn't really lose going away. She does kind of change a little strategy and tendencies. And you saw her make some adjustments and really start attacking and playing assertive tennis as that match went on.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Sabalenka yesterday because I thought Collins was running away with it. And then the second set, she had a breakpoint opportunity that would have put her a game away, I think. And just she literally was being outplayed for most of the day. And then she found the level that she needed, just started to redline in the second and third sets, really wasn't missing any shots, was hitting for a lot of power. And yeah, it's just going to be really interesting to see her play Andreeva. It seems like we'll get to that match later, I'm sure. But it seems like a trap line from the oddsmakers.
And I'm only saying this because she shared it on her Instagram story, but the oldest woman to go on a 15-match win streak. And she's like, look at this granny doing big things. So 30-year-old Danielle Collins going on that run. The Madrid Masters is heating up. On the men's side, we did avoid a couple upsets today narrowly, some closer than others. And it was evident by what we saw in the matches of the top two seeds going on simultaneously. So would have had to be a multiple screen setup to catch all of it. But Sinner and Alcaraz reached the Madrid quarterfinals with three set victories. Kenny, both these guys were pushed. Khachanov wins the first set against Sinner. Sinner rebounds with 2-6-3 sets. Alcaraz had to go to a third set tiebreak to beat a red hot Jan Lennard Struff, who saved match points to force there. But both these guys survive. Starting in the case of Jannik Sinner, you know, he's not, in his own words, at full health. Khachanov is just a tough, tough competitor, as we know. But again, Sinner drops the first set in a match in one of these Masters and finds a way through.
Yeah, Khachanov's that guy that just plays at, I think, his best level in all these matches almost every single time. Every single time he goes up against a top five player, he never really disappoints, right? He never just throws away a serve. He doesn't make a lot of errors. He just plays pretty much to his full capability, which is usually not good enough. I don't know if you guys are very familiar. I mean, I'm sure you are with the Khachanov-Djokovic head-to-head after he beat him in Paris. But like every single one of those matches, it's always a four game spread, and it's always Djokovic covering by the hook. And it's like it just Khachanov will do everything in his power that he can to win a match. So I think anytime there's a little bit of a dip on the other side of the net, like we saw with Sinner, there it gets interesting. And I do feel like, you know, there is a little bit of a concern here. The Kotov match, Sinner had a little bit of trouble. He was down a break in that second set. I thought maybe it was just the weird style of play that Kotov plays, who's just one of the best watches on tour, honestly, that like is just not really a very talented player. Does have a great forehand on the run, which is like a very strange strength to begin with. But that was sort of what I chalked it up as, like, oh, you know, maybe it's weird to play this guy for the first time, you know, or the first time in a while. And then, you know, he kind of looked a little flat against Khachanov. So we'll see what happens the rest of this tournament. I certainly would put him on upset alert going forward with a very strong field remaining. But you would think in this in altitude, like this is where Sinner really should play his best clay court tennis. So I don't know. Both these guys are really just making a meal out of these matches that they shouldn't be making a meal out of.
The announcer said something about Sinner doing a lot of gym work throughout the course of this tournament, trying to strengthen himself up for Roland Garros at the expense of, you know, these tournaments in the next few weeks. So maybe he's a little fatigued there.
Oh, we've talked about that privately, Zico, how that's why that's just not smart. Because this whole game is hard.
I don't like it either.
It's just free arms, free swing.
Especially because he's played so much tennis in 2024 compared to that of the rest of the field. And then now you're going to add in that extra work and you haven't really had any time off. he's going to be cooked by the time Roland Garros comes around. And I know that you mentioned earlier, like, you cannot put too much stock into Madrid. However, at the same token, I think you can still look at players like Khachanov, like Felix Auger, or like even Struff, Cerundolo. These are a whole bunch of other players that, hey, maybe if you face them in the early rounds, first through four, you're not, you don't want to face these players, because then your potential to go a full five really comes into play here. So maybe you're not at risk for an outright loss as one of the top seeds, but you are at risk for fatigue early in the tournament if you end up against one of these guys.
LA Knight over there saying about nine times, but you know, it's really just in agreement. I think that perhaps the wounds have not yet healed from my Taylor Fritz Roland Garros future. And I will say he did beat Francisco Cerundolo at the French Open and did have some quality wins. So to Pam's point, like, he was a tougher out than I think most people would have given him credit for. So certainly there's a lot to take here in terms of how players are improving. I would also say, I don't actually think it's the worst idea in the world, although I did just say that Sinner does try to strengthen the lower body at least, because clay is sort of his weakness. And I do feel like you need a much stronger and thicker lower half to excel on that surface. But like, also, you are the best player in the world right now and you just won a clay tournament. And I see why they would want to do that with him, but
he's going to have time to do it would be the counter to that.
Well, think about what we saw from Carlos Alcaraz. He knew that him and his team knew that he needed to strengthen his body and pack on some muscle in order to sustain the level of tennis that he wants to play. But when did Alcaraz do that? From like November through January before the Australian Open. And Sinner is trying to do that mid-season of a clay court where clay court is already taxing on your body because of the longer rallies. It's just poor timing, in my opinion. Could there have been a better opportunity? Yes, but I think right now you're in the thick of it. Run with what you got and then create your own off-season after the U.S. Open and build up your strength there.
I think there's a perfect time for it, because even like in Alcaraz's case, he plays Aussie and then doesn't do well there. And it's like, did he make a sacrifice there to get better long term? I don't know. It's
we also don't know. Like, I mean, that's just something you hear on TV. We don't know if he has been working on this all year, you know, like who knows?
Cardio.
Like, when are you going to work on it?
The Alcaraz Struff match, though, another interesting one. Struff, fighting again late. I think this was very reminiscent of the Rogers Cup match a little bit ago, where Struff just makes it interesting. He was playing great tennis. He saved match points to get to that tiebreak. Zico Alcaraz finds a way through. He started to see, you know, the greatness come back out. I think it's fair to also say he's not at 100% rust wise. There was something there, but you got to give credit to Struff, because when he's serving big, even players like Alcaraz couldn't quite read what was coming over.
Yeah, and this is one where we talked about the altitude helping like a big server like Struff. So I thought that, you know, it was a tough matchup for Alcaraz. But like you said, he did find a way through. I thought he looked really good in the tiebreaker. And just probably one of those matches that helps you more than it hurts you. You just kind of play your way into form before some bigger matches. You know, Alcaraz hasn't played a lot of tennis over the last few weeks. So I think that something like this coming out on the other side of it is going to end up helping him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. And Pam, looking at Alcaraz's road here, I mean, this is a tournament he's won twice. He's going for the incomparable three-peat. We know he's got bigger goals in front of him, but this one where the altitude, I think, helping him a little bit too, some giving him a chance to show off his wheels and some of the speed that he has on the court.
I mean, so far I'm feeling like, why didn't I bet him? I was like, I really had to go further down the board. And it should just be Carlos and Sinner, those two, for the time being. Until further notice.
Absolutely. We've got an update in that Felix match, Kenny. Unfortunately, we got Felix back on serve, I think.
So, yeah, he's up 30 love at 2-3. So we're still cooking. So three and a half games, though.
Yeah, but I saw the money line right now. Like, no, and you got on it early because it's 2.5 as of before the match time. So that was a good pull by you there. Do we want to talk about what we've seen from Rafael Nadal at this tournament? I think that'd be a good time. Notches a few wins and counting at Madrid in exactly an hour, depending on match time and what finishes. We will see Nadal play Jiří Lehečka, some action on that match. But Pam, opening up the floor to you first, what we've seen from Nadal, the big win over Demonar, looked very, very good in that match. Level dipped a little bit, finds a way through Pedro Cashin in the next round. And gets the Czech player that's knocked out several Russians this year at the top of the rankings. So thoughts on Nadal at Madrid?
Watching Nadal in Madrid, what I've seen is that maybe now everyone will get the memo just how far beyond Nadal's level is on a clay surface compared to the rest of the field, even when he's not at his best. Kachin is a very good.
I'm probably wrong.
He is a very good clay court player, and it was a nasty match in the second and the third set. But this is coming into at the French Open. Nadal is going to give us what we as sports fans want to watch, and that's magic. Kachin is a top 15, 20 clay court player out there. What we're seeing from Nadal is that he's showing a lot of match management rust. And against these players, but at least what I'm very happy about is that we are seeing the positivity in his physicality, getting in some of these reps against higher caliber opponents and showing that he can still get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, Kenny, I want to give you a chance to discuss this as well, because I know you've had you love that Bubba clip so much and the draw situation. But that being said, this will be the first time we see him play back-to-back matches on back-to-back days at this Masters. So we'll see.
I mean, what are you trying to say? Alex De Minaur is an easy draw?
No. I know.
That's what you implied. I don't know. I thought you were going to talk about the Medvedev clip where he said the Illuminati was controlling the roof. I thought that, honestly, that's where you were going. I think, look, I mean, maybe we shouldn't have given Darwin Blanche so much slack for losing 6-love, 6-1 if we were going to see a performance like this from Rafa going forward. Look, I think, yeah, you know, Pedro Kachin, in theory, good clay court player. He's had more clay success in his career, hasn't had a great season. I think you could, if you want to, yes, write off a what is this draw player. Maybe that's Kachin, but I thought the De Minaur match proved a lot. Obviously, he beat him last week. He's been really good on clay. He's just been really solid in general on all surfaces over the last full year now, calendar year. And yeah, Lehechka, he's, you know, look, beating baby Djokovic, Medvedevic, that's not an easy match. He's a very good competitor. Thiago Monteiro at altitude, again, in theory, tougher match. I just don't think Lehechka is ready for this match. The word I used last week when we were talking about Djokovic, aura. The aura is back with Rafa. I think that's basically how these guys have won so many matches. I think it's the intimidation factor. These guys are shaking in their boots when there's even a scent of, oh, you know, Rafa is back to being Rafa. And I think we're just starting to see that slowly creep in. But, you know, you guys know I'm not a big Jiří Lehečka fan. I think that if you want to use your brain here, he would theoretically play pretty well here. It's hitting through altitude, hitting with his big ground strokes. I just don't think with Nadal's mind, if you want to talk about a mental war here, Lehečka is not going to have a game plan that's going to work against Rafa. He's not going to be able to problem solve. Those are the types of players that can get things done against Rafael Nadal. But he knows what's going to come at him at the net. He's just going to rock it forehands, and some of them are going to go, you know, 5 feet wide. Some of them are going to land. But I think ultimately he's going to exploit Jiří's weakness, which is bad shot selection. And I think he's going to lose this match.
This match just really comes down to what I've been saying. You cannot bet on or against Nadal prior to Roland Garros because this line is so fishy. For him to be a minus 105 underdog and Lehečka minus 115, like, it's so weird. Like, you're gonna tell me, I'm sorry, Lehečka is just right there to the competitive level of De Minaur? Not, no. And I'm just like, okay, so there's two things. One, either Nadal is already like, I've gotten all the practice reps that I need. I know that I can do it. Physicality, I'm going to save it. I still want to make a run at Rome. Or Mitch, y'all mentioned it at the top of the show that like Real Madrid is happening today. I don't know if that's like a real factor. It could be. It could be. Yeah. But I just think this line itself, it is so weird, so fishy. And if it smells like a fish, looks like a fish, it's probably it's a little bit.
Well, Zico's going against Kenny on this one, and he got it at an even money before the line shifted. And I do think a lot of it is, I mean, I brought it up earlier, but I think, let's see, back-to-back days, what's the level like?
And he played three hours.
Yeah, 3 hours is a lot.
We've never seen Rafael Nadal play back-to-back days. This is very true. never once in his career.
2024, a lot. Okay, all right. Zico, go ahead on the on team Chechia. Yeah,
I mean, it was a three-hour match from Nadal against a player that it's like 25 and 41 over the last 2 years. I just don't think that it was an impressive win. I'm just not there with Nadal. Like, I obviously, like, when he's hitting, making shots, it looks like Nadal because it is Nadal. Like, the lefty forehand always looks nice when it's firing, but I just think he's missing shots, you know, that he normally makes. I think his serve looks really bad. I just think that this is a really tough matchup for him. I do agree with Kenny, like, with the aura. Like, I was actually telling a friend the other day, like, playing with Nadal, like, especially at Roland Garros, is going to be like Serena Williams in that final U.S. Open, where you're going to have to overcome, like, a totally different beast in order to win. And it will be hard for Laheshka to do that. But Laheshka is a really powerful player from both wings. I think he's going to be able to move Nadal around a little bit. And Laheshka's a little bit of a better server than Demonor is, which I think Demonor ran into some trouble on his own serve. And I also think it helped that Nadal got a second look at Demonor, you know, after playing him a week before. I also thought Demonor played a really sloppy final set in that match. So I just think this is a really tough matchup for Nadal. I am just not treating him, you know, like the player we saw before these injuries. Like, I'm just treating him more like a 40 or 50th best player in the world, which you call me crazy for that. I know that it's, you know, Rafa at Roland Garros, but I have to go based on what I've seen and just what we know about his body, which is not in a good place right now.
I don't think you're crazy at all, honestly. I just think, I don't know, maybe I'd won on Rafa once this week. I'll do it again. Maybe that's the prevailing theory. I also think Laheshka's, like, it's just not hard to game plan against Kirill Hetchka at all. I mean, how many times has Rafa just faced a big ball basher? I mean, a million times. There's nothing unique about his game. And he can hit through a lot of people, and he just overpowers a lot of people. But he's going to have to play at his very best, limit the errors, which he doesn't always do. That's always my biggest qualm with him. Honestly, the reason I hate him is a big compliment, because he can be so good, and he's not, because he just throws away these matches. He makes a bunch of errors. And he just does not have clarity of thought with his shot selection. So I just don't think this is a very hard, like, Demonor sneak. Like, he's added a lot to his game. He's a sneaky guy to game. He's a hard guy to game plan against. He plays a lot of good defense. You have to really strategize in terms of what shots are going to end up winning rallies. Like, if you're facing Laheshka, you absolutely know what's coming at you at the end of the net. There's going to be absolutely no changes in his game plan, no in-match adjustments. It might take three sets, but, like, I just don't see Jiří doing it. I'm sorry.
It was helpful, though, that he got to play Montero, because Montero is a really good clay court player, just beat Tsitsipas. I just thought that was a nice little, like.
You're right. I laughed because, like, now we just compared Thiago Montero to the greatest lefty tennis player of all time. But no, I mean,
yeah, he's a righty Nadal.
Facing a lefty is, and look, you know, Montero hits the ball pretty hard. But also, I want to use your words against you, Zico. We talked about how the flattened out forehand with Nadal was going to be his weapon and really his way back in his older age. We've seen it with Djokovic. We've seen it with Rafa. It wasn't really working in in the early parts of the season. And I think this is going to be the place he can make that work for him, if it's going to work anywhere, really. So I feel like there's a lot more power to his game right now, because he just can't move quite as well. But as you said, though, the serve, you know, the serve doesn't look that great. So we'll see.
It's just, we're trying to guess as, like, bettors, as, or even as fans, we're trying to guess, like, what does Nadal want to do? Does he want to make a run at Madrid for one last, for what? For literally nothing, for nothing. He's already played against two very competitive matches, and his physicality is holding up. Like I said, he's having a little in-match rust. But outside of that, we're trying to guess, what does Nadal want to do? Continue preserving his body to maybe make a better, longer, a deeper run in Rome, to then, of course, make a deep run, another final opportunity in Roland Garros? Or does he want to, what is he doing? So because of that, you cannot bet on or against.
I think we talk about this all the time as handicappers.
So that goes well
beyond this show and well beyond this sport. You know, there's, like, you'll always hear, like, it's playoff time, right? right now. You'll say, oh, well, 3-1, this team doesn't want to, you know, go back to Colorado and play. You know, I'm going to spoil it for everybody. I think every athlete wants to win every game and match. Yeah. So, like, I do, I think.
Oh, yes. But we also saw in Barcelona where his team was like, chill, bro. We need to preserve you.
You get it, like, preserving, but he's still trying.
It's not like we'll show them next week. I think
my issue, too, is, like, the body preservation argument, like, assumes that there is a Roland Garros winning version of Rafa
right
there, and I just don't think that there is.
I am saving receipts.
I just think he could lose, but I think he's gonna try and want to win is the point. And it's not, I'm saying it's something we hear every day, and it's like it always drives me crazy. Like, oh, this team just wants to end the series, or they don't want to lose. Like, every team and player wants to win. So I think we always forget that sometimes. Right. We overthink.
It would be very disrespectful to Nadal to be like, Demonard wasn't really going all out in that match, so we don't want to go the other way and, you know, take away from that. I get it. All right. We're gonna keep it moving there on Tennis Bets Live. Kenny Ducey, Zachary Cohn, Pamela Maldonado. A lot of other things to talk about as well. We've got matches in progress. We've got a couple matches today. We've got the women's quarterfinals as well. And Pam, you did have one pick I wanted to get to for tomorrow. Going to the women's quarterfinal, you're going under Rybakina Putintseva 20 games. And I think if I have this right, you just trust the big serve and, you know, Kazakhstan and Rybakina to beat her countrymate and win this match.
What has been the theme of today's show? Flatter ground strokes, big serves, power hitters. And that's exactly Rybakina. And Putintseva, she's good. She's a good baseliner. She has good defense, but she just doesn't have the same type of power. So because of that, I think this is going to be like Rybakina wiping the court with her. It's going to be a practice run. Should win in straight sets, but winning in straight sets was like heavily juiced. So I'll take the risk on the under.
Putintseva has a lot of, well, I would say she fights a lot, but there's also a lot of wayward sets, I would also argue.
She also gets in fights too.
She gets in fights. And because of that emotion that she tends to have on court, like, it can kind of work against her. And so she loses the mentality in crucial moments. That's where the game can just slip away.
Hey, Zico, is someone that has futures and one being Iga, is Rybakina the only real threat that you're worried about left in this tournament, or maybe Sabalenka if she turns it on?
I think so. Like, I'm really liking the way Iga's playing in this tournament. I think that the changes she's made to her forehand and serve have definitely made her a little more dangerous on a faster court. So I think that this is going to be one where we look back and wish that we kind of all wish that we better. Because I do think that there was something to her not winning Madrid before, being kind of the clay court, you know, master on the women's side. I just think she really wants to get this one.
Yeah, that match today, and you know, looking at what she did winning that match against Haddad Maia, who's a tough player, made that run last year at RG. Iga took her out in two tight sets, but the adjustment after losing the set. We don't really, Kenny, we don't have a lot of data on Iga losing sets on clay, but this was a good bounce back, only losing two games the rest of the match.
Well, it's kind of mirrored what we saw, I believe, when they played at Roland Garros last year, where it was a very tight first set. I think Haddad Maia either was up a break or had a lead in the tiebreak or had set points in the tiebreak. I'm not quite sure which one it was. I guess if you were up a break in the tiebreak, you might have. Anyway, she had a way in that to take a set in that match. Didn't. It was very close. But I think, as we see a lot of times with the great players on tour, that, you know, sometimes after you don't get that first set, it's just, you know, mentally it's over. So that is really what happened here. But yeah, I would agree with Zico. I think Iga looks a lot better than we thought she was going to look at this tournament. Obviously, she's just not the same player as she was 2 years ago when she just had that otherworldly run to rise to one and really never let it go. She's been slightly vulnerable here and there. It does feel like rounding back into clay season, getting back to what she did best when she was 19 and really introduced herself to the world. I think it's kind of scary because she's been so dominant on hard courts, which just came not out of nowhere, but came really quickly. And now she's back to, you know, playing the clay court tennis that we know she can. So sort of like a Casper Ruud career arc, except not as good or dominant. But I think that this is going to be a scary Roland Garros, and we continue to watch the odds, the futures, and they continue to go down. And we keep saying, Iga, you know, I mean, what would you bet Iga to, Zach?
-200, I think.
That's right. I mean, yeah. It's insane, but that's really.
But
that's
you really, but you would. Like, I yeah. think you would.
Yeah.
I think I've done also, it before with her. So, like, I will.
Also, Anja Bord just beat Madison Keys in about 25 minutes, a 6-love set. So Hey, Anja Bor finding her way back here. This Madrid is just opening doors again because you're seeing Rublev played better tennis on the men's side. Jabor's there. We'll see what Felix does.
It always is. Aslan Karatsev, pour one out.
pour one out for Anja.
He's back, though, and he covered. He covered here. That was a big hit for me.
I got to give
it out and clean it up.
Yeah, definitely. I got to on calf raise day. Gotta give you credit, Kenny, for Fritz. The call over Hubie -130. Really, you know, one of those sets was tight. One of those wasn't as Fritz on this surface doing very well. Madrid seems like it suited for his game. This was not an easy match too. You can't talk big hitters without Hubie, and yet Fritz dispatches him.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I enjoyed watching that match quite a bit, obviously, because I was right. And, you know, I mean, being right, what is better than being right? There's nothing better than that. But no, he was, I mean, look, he came into the match. He was 3-1 against UB. They never played on clay. But I think what we talked about earlier in the show with, you know, looking at people, I mean, we talked about it before the tournament with Zverev, obviously he lost, but guys that just will play well here and have played well here. I mean, if you weren't paying attention, look, not a lot of people want to give Taylor Fritz any credit. I get it. You know, I'm sort of that way sometimes too. He should be ranked higher than he is now. He probably should have won some of the bigger matches that he's played in his career. He's had the opportunities. You could talk about that all you want, but I think sometimes that clouds our vision. And what we saw through two matches last year was an unbelievable Taylor Fritz. Like he was just hitting the crap, the life out of the ball. Then he ran into Zhang, and it looked like it was handled, and Zhang just hit back harder. I mean, I think the inclination was, oh, look at Fritz losing again to some guy that we've never heard of. And if you watch that match, I mean, he couldn't do anything. I mean, the guy was unplayable, and he played so well. That's why I was just like, yeah, you know, the head-to-head, the fact that he played so well here last year and looked dominant until he ran into just a guy really who was playing at the time, like a top 15 level. I felt like there was a lot of value here, and I was happy to see it through. And yeah, I mean, that was obviously a tight first set, but it was a pretty one-way tiebreak. Honestly, Fritz just looked really composed, hit his shots, didn't make mistakes, hit corners deep, and he looked really good. So I think I'm gonna continue to back him. He's a favorite here against Cerundolo, and the money's already coming in on Fritz for good reason. Yeah. And I I'm not gonna go as far as to say he's gonna have a good Roland Garros, because we know how that went last year. But I do feel like he's a weapon in Madrid, and I think we got to start respecting that.
It also really upset him that or motivated him that he lost that top ranked American spot for 1 week only. But he really did not like that. That's confirmed there. Live odds as well, pointing out it's getting tight in that second set. So still in good shape, Kenny.
30 all at 4 all. So big point here.
You got Casper battling. And yeah, just looking ahead to some of the matches that we have on deck for tomorrow that we haven't gotten to already. Zico, we talked about it earlier. This quarterfinal line is juicy. We've gassed up Mira Andreeva a lot. She's 17 now, just turned 17 this tournament. This is quite the respect, I would say, from the odds makers, given this odd against the player that has won the Grand Slam this year so far. But how do you read this one?
Yeah, I got to look into it a little bit more, but this line makes me want to take Andreeva, because I does feel like the odds makers being like, let's get everybody that doesn't watch a lot of tennis to bet the two-time Grand Slam champion against a 17-year-old. Like, it just feels like they want you to bet Sabalenka in a way that I just can't, you know, help myself from going the other way.
I'm in full agreement. I like Andreeva here. I think you look at the Sabalenka draw, it's sort of working against her. The Collins match, obviously, was a tough one. Danielle is playing, you know, her best tennis as she rides off into the sunset. But Sabalenka really didn't have to face much until that point. I think you saw it early in that match that she just maybe wasn't ready to step up to that. I mean, it was a quite large Robin Montgomery to Danielle Collins is a quite large step up in terms of level and in terms of someone who could beat you as a top 10 player. So I don't know. I don't know if she's ready for this. Andreeva, on the other hand, has played some really solid opponents. We obviously talked about the Noskova match when we had our last show previewing that, how excited we were for the alt, or actually she had just won at that point. But then Vondrousova, you know, I wouldn't say it's a hard, hard opponent, but Vondrousova is a tough out for sure, especially on clay and at altitude. And then Paolini as well has been playing really well this year. So I just think she's come through a lot of great opponents. Zach mentioned it, like, this is a trap line on Sabalenka, and eventually Andreeva is going to win one of these matches and these tournaments. And it works like, oh yeah, duh. Like, of course she was going to do that. Like Iga did that at Roland Garros. And we're like, oh, well, we all knew that was going to happen, but we didn't think it was going to happen right now. And that's just kind of how tennis works, right? Sinner at the Ushman Open this year, although we did kind of think that was going to happen. But, you know, yeah. It happens.
I just want to point out what we do on Tennis Bets Live as we sniff out the rat lines. So good job by everybody keeping your guard up here for some chaos that might happen going forward.
I have a lot of familiarity with the rats here in New York City. So that's
obviously.
I want to go ahead and, like, third on that. Just looking at this is like pure betting number. Yeah, -200 for Sabalenka. Like this is another like fishy line compared to that in Nadal. And I mean, from her opponent, like she's the type of player that wants to wear her opponent down. And when Sabalenka has already had like a difficult draw up to this point, the line in conjunction with the style of play from, and I always say her name wrong, Andreeva. I think I get better with WTA names. Yeah. I would go to the
line. At least ask and don't just assume like some people do, and not on this show, obviously. But you know, it's better.
I've definitely done it. All right.
Thoughts on the other one? We're going to see if we get the last quarterfinal that's already set. But thoughts on, as Kenny mentioned, right now, Fritz at -142, Cerundolo +122. We'll see if that moves. But Zico, any thoughts on where this line is right now, and any betting strategy for the fans out there?
I feel like Kenny will call it a cop out. I do think this is going to go over, though. I think this is.
I was like, I swear, I'm going to say the same thing.
Coward.
Yeah. I just feel like this is the best of Cerundolo against Taylor Fritz, who's a better player than him. But like, I think that the best of Cerundolo is capable of pushing Fritz. I just think this is going to be a really classic like power matchup where we see two lengthy sets at the very least. I also think you'll probably see over 2.5 sets hit here.
I agree, though. You know, you are a coward. Yes, wear it. And I'm glad you did. But this has the same vibe of Cerundolo Shelton in Miami, which was like an epic match for people who like tennis and nobody else. It was, I'm sure no one was up at, what was it, 9-10 p.m. on a weeknight watching that match. But that was great. You know, it was much later. I think it was like midnight. But like, this does have the feel of a long match. It's going to take a little bit for Fritz. And honestly, I just mentioned that Fritz Zhang match could be very similar to that as well, where Fritz is looking really good and he just runs into a guy hitting harder. And like that could easily happen here. I still think Fritz wins. I like him to win, but I think over is, I gave out an over last week or last show too. So I don't know, maybe I'm coming around on the overs, but
then three amigos pick. I think this also goes a full three sets. I think Cerundolo has a chance here at the upset, just the way that he was playing today against Zverev. His returns, like it was so unreal. He was kissing the baseline every time, and Zverev was even like, "Nope, it was in. It kissed and painted the baseline. He had such deep returns, and it never let up. I was like, okay, certainly, there's at some point this power that he's having is gonna have to ease off. It never did. If he can keep that style of play against Fritz, and he's gonna use a lot of Fritz's power against him, he's the better returner. His serve is pretty big and precise. I think Cerundolo could have a chance at the upset, but I definitely like this to go three sets.
Well, my official pick is Fritz. So
yeah,
I do appreciate sorry Kenny, to ruin the party for everybody.
Kenny getting in touch with his inner coward is great. So welcome for coming around on that.
But I'm not. I'm going with Fritz because pick a side.
I said getting one last week.
You did. So
I did. But pick a side.
Do we? I haven't seen it, but do we have any thoughts on what Rublev Alcaraz, what that might look like?
Not really.
Very little faith in Rublev. I don't know what the odds are, but very little faith.
It's nice to see under because Carlos is going to whoop him. Whatever it is, Carlos to win his trade sets. Carlos to.
I do want to give Rublev.
All right, fine. I'll take Rublev. Yeah. Sure, why not? I'll say Rublev wins.
What's
sure.
that number?
I like the over.
Yeah. I mean, this is what we all talk about value, right? Like, no one on this show is doubting Alcaraz. Maybe Kenny, just going outlier, but. What's that game share going to be? Are they going to overvalue Alcaraz here? I'm just curious. And I was trying to find it, but we don't have it yet. So
thoughts. My issue with this matchup is like, I think you have to have a way better serve than Rublev's to beat Alcaraz. And just, that's like the one part of Rublev's game. Yeah. Like I really am dying for it to be better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also I will counter that with Carlos's serve on clay is not nearly as good. And we've seen that for years now. He just has a harder time on clay holding serve for whatever reason. Obviously there's less pace on it and maybe the second serve doesn't have quite enough kick, but
you never worry about Alcaraz's serve or Nadal's serve because they're not known for their serve. Who cares? You broke him. Great. Hold on to that break. Well, can you convert? No.
When he was playing like Diaz Acosta at Golden Swing or whatever he was doing, it's a little different. I think it's a top, it's a top 10 player who plays really well. Like, I don't know if you can, I think, yeah, the poor serving from Rublev at times is going to ultimately work against him. But there's just a certain amount of times you can drop your serve against a top 10 player before it actually really hurts you. And also I do feel like he is going to drop his serve. So that would lead me to say I might want to take the games here with Rublev. But I don't know. I mean, that Ugo Carabelli match, what was going on there? He dropped his serve, I think, only twice in the first set, but he won 6-2. And then he dropped his serve like three times in the second set. He did it again against Vavasori. He's done it for years on clay, and I don't really get it. But I don't know. I just think that's the only argument I can make for Rublev is that's a way in against Alcaraz, and there's really not many ways in against Alcaraz ever.
We're about to wrap up, but I did want to say, Zico, before we lose you to the dogs and furniture life, this is the number right now, -130. What do you think it will be on day one? Are we going to see that -200 number for Egan to win RG?
I don't think it'll get much further than -150. I think that there's enough faith in Sabalenka and Rybakina, especially the way that they've played the last few weeks, that this will probably stick around there.
-160.
The only thing I would say is I don't know how this is going to affect it, but she wins Madrid. There's a decent chance she skips Rome. She skipped it in the past, so it might not be just Madrid, Rome, just winning everything. That said,
but it could be people betting though that too.
All right, well, gang, this is always a fun show. I know we're gonna have to see what happens. It's 5-5 in that second set of Felix and Casper. So Kenny, best of luck to you with that. Any final thoughts before we wind it down here on Tennis Bets Live? Pam, starting with you.
I miss Novak Djokovic. I miss watching him on court. Clay Videv has been really fun watching his antics, talking about the Illuminati. I can't wait for him. I wish we had seen more Clay Videv, but I think we'll see a lot. We still have opportunities here.
There goes Zach. My final thoughts were, I just want to give an injury update on Corentin Moutet because I subscribed to his Instagram broadcast channel, which not many people do. He has a slight injury to the right, and then the word didn't translate correctly over from French. He's hoping to be back for Rome, so we can resume talking about Corentin Moutet, hopefully, in a week.
All needed.
Yeah,
slight right leg injury. I think he'll be fine. And then, of course, he also wants to thank all of his supporters. Thank you for the support. I've come a long way 1 year ago, but I'm holding on to come back and level up even better. That's the translation on Instagram. But
I just
shout out to the Corentin Moutet. Make sure that leg's good for Roland Garros. That's all I care about.
Shout out to him. I just hope Zico's okay. I feel like we should check in and see where he's at. But
probably. Yeah, just the dogs really just one of those days betting favorites. The dogs just got the best of them.
Are two out. Well, for Zachary Cohen, for Kenny Ducey, for Pamela Maldonado, I'm Mitch Michaels. This was Tennis Bets Live. More coverage on the lead up to Roland Garros. We're not going anywhere, so definitely subscribe to the show. Set an alert for us when we go live on YouTube, Twitter, and tennis.com every week. And enjoy us on the podcast network as well on all your favorite platforms. Take it easy, everyone. Enjoy the Madrid Masters and enjoy the road to Roland Garros. We'll talk to you soon.